drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. In a war far from home, a soldier is captured. Rescued months later, she's pregnant and has lost all memory of the time away. In a gated community set against the side of a mountain, a mother stagnates in privileged isolation. When these two damaged women are joined by their children, the result is blood. The Mere Wife, the new book by Maria Devana Headley, is a modern-day retelling of Beowulf that serves as a sharp satire of our times but retains the wonder of the original epic. And she's my guest in the drawing room. Maria, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It was actually a very different book that you set you on this path. How did Revolutionary Road bring you to Beowulf?
Well, about 10 years ago, maybe a little longer, I was reading Revolutionary Road, which is the novel of American suburbia, and misery in same. And I didn't have any understanding of it. I grew up in a really rural area in Idaho, which is similar, I think, to some parts of very rural Australia. So I thought, what are these suburbs? Why would you want to live there? Why would this be a dream at all? It sounds horrible to me. And I just didn't understand it. And it sort of haunted me because I couldn't understand why it was important. I couldn't understand why that meant anything to American society and to the world society. So I thought about it and thought about it for years. It was just haunting me and irritating me. And finally, I started thinking about the notion of the people outside the suburb, the idea that there would be monsters outside the gate. And that, of course, is common ground with Beowulf, the idea that you have a gated community, a hall in that case, and outside the hall there are monsters that are coming for you.
You can feel the viciousness of suburbia in this book.
Yes. Yes. Inside the hall, there are plenty of people who are coming for you as well. And that's, for me, that was the point. I think we're all attacking each other in a variety of different ways that are less obvious in literature that isn't from the point of view of some of the characters who are also victims.
And why then Beowulf? You know, you just say that there's similar themes here, but why this particular epic?
I think I was interested in part the notion of it as a masculine epic, the idea that the hero Beowulf is this strong man. And the notion of that has been pretty unchallenged, even though in the original he's a much more complicated character. The woman that he fights in Beowulf, Grendel's mother, has been longstandingly translated as a monster. But in the original version, she's not a monster. She's a soldier. She's very good with a sword. She's tough. And I was interested in looking at humanity, just looking at that in the context of our contemporary world where women are fighting in wars, where the notion of a masculine hero is one that I think has been challenged a lot lately and is one that I think should be challenged. The idea of a good man who actually hasn't done good deeds, he's just calling himself a hero. So I was interested in looking at our society through that lens.
You say in the original, so you think the existing translations don't capture the reality of the tale?
I think that's true. I think there's plenty of scholarship that does, but the existing translations, for the most part, translate Beowulf as a pretty uncomplicated, strong man who comes in and does some good work, and he fights these bad, bad monsters. And in the original, I think it's a more complicated story. Grendel's mother is a strange character, and she is basically defending her son. Her story is the story of a single mother whose son is complicated and has trouble with a neighboring community, and they kill him. And she comes to get his body and bury him. So that's her story, but that's not the story we know as Beowulf generally.
What's the value as a writer of moving a classic and epic into the modern day, into a contemporary story?
I think there's lots of value to analyzing the reasons a story has lasted so long. This story is 1,000 years old. It continues. It's been adapted lots of times. We have so many thoughts about these stories and the way they've also shaped our society. So for me to go back into a story that old and reanalyze it and look at it through both our contemporary lens and also through a lens of what does this word really mean? What does that story really say? What is this really a story about? I think it impacts the way that we think about our society now, the way we think about the notions of hero and monster, the way we think about other and us, the way we think about us and them. And that's obviously very politically relevant and always has been.
So in this version, your version, it's the mothers that are the focus. How novel, mothers being the focus. And as you've suggested, that makes it much more complicated, right? Was that freeing? How much complexity is too much for an author?
I don't know. I wish I knew how much complexity was too much. In the case of these characters, the two women that we were focused on are both really complicated. They're neither one is a hero or a monster. They both do bad things. They both do good things. For me to look deeply into their perspectives, into their point of view, and to hear the story from their eyes was useful because they are pretty much not, they don't speak to each other. So we're looking at the notion of fear from both sides. And I think for me, doing that from the women's POV, particularly these women who are protecting men in both cases, they're protecting young sons, and they're also protecting their societies, or in the case of the woman who's in the suburbs, she's really protecting her power. So looking at it that way and looking at the way we protect our power and the ways in which we might fail completely at ethics in an effort to protect our status is something that I was interested in doing with this book.
You have a chapter that's an aside from the perspective of the grandmothers, mm-hmm. who you see as warriors in their own right.
Mm-hmm. I have a collective POV of the suburban matriarchs. So they are, in my mind, they're Beowulf soldiers. And Beowulf in this book is a police officer. So these are the women who are helping him have his power, which in the U.S. we've had lots of discussion about that being power that is generally racist power. And we have a longstanding tradition of problems in that regard with police forces and the idea that one must protect one's society from those big, bad people outside. So the women in that group speak collectively. They are also victims of their own society. They're victims of trying to make the men that they support have power, but the men are very flawed. And they end up with men who are doing bad things, and they're still supporting them, and the women are trying to maintain their status so that they don't end up with nothing, which I think is a really, really valid in terms of the way the world has worked in its sexist ways.
It's like a rational reaction to a reality, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's life and death fear on all sides, I think.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelis. Maria Davana Headley is my guest in the drawing room. We're talking about Beowulf, The Mere Wife, and other epics. So how is your translation different to the ones that already exist?
Well,
Really different.
I mean, this is an adaptation, and then I have a new translation coming out next year. And my translation will be different largely just because I'm not translating Grendel's mother as a monster. I'm translating her in the original. The word that describes her is the same word that describes Beowulf. She just has the feminine. And usually people translate that as hag rather than as hero or even as warrior. So I'm interested in translating her as a human. It changes the story if he's fighting a human woman rather than a monster. It changes his ethical stance. It changes what he does. And that is a different version of Beowulf that we haven't really thought about or seen. And scholarly people have thought about it. It's something that has been a really disputed point. So it's interesting to get to publish a translation that actually uses that scholarship and adds it to the narrative that we know as Beowulf.
That translation choice, hag instead of warrior, tells us a lot about the way we tell stories or the stories we're told, doesn't it, really?
It really does, doesn't it, right? Imagine that just picking up a sword would turn you into a monster. Mm. And of course, as a woman, I know that personally, that the idea that I might be threatening could easily make me someone who would be allowably killed. And that's something, or also just a transgressor societally. So yeah, this is the storytelling. The storytelling is, I'm just going to translate that word slightly differently for the woman. And for the woman, it will be translated as hag or as creature or as hell bride. That's a translation that is in the canon. And really the word that is being translated just means formidable. It means warrior. It means tough. It means nothing to do with good or bad.
So doing this translation of the original, as well as your adaptation, is that an attempt to, you know, reclaim the story? Can a story be reclaimed?
It's, if not reclaim, it would be an attempt, I think, at least to reanalyze it, to look at a story that we've talked about a lot over the years. There's so much knowledge of Beowulf. And it has been some of the story that has shaped our political discourse in America, certainly, and in the world. The idea that a good man would fight monsters, that's a way to get status as a man. And I'm interested in the way that we do that in many different arenas. So yeah, I want to flip it over and look at what's inside of it. And what's inside of it is interesting. It's really relevant to our contemporary society. So yeah, I don't know if I need to claim it as a feminist take on, but I think the story itself is already fairly feminist. There's a major female warrior in that story that has often not been acknowledged.
Feminist, but it wasn't meant to be.
No, it wasn't. It was about
secret feminist.
Secret feminist equality. It was just the basic premise of feminism, which is that we're equal, which is what is in that book.
So radical. You've moved between works for adults and young adults over your career. Do you have a sense of what it will be before you begin?
Not necessarily. For me, they're all the same kind of story. As a young person, I was reading in the adult shelves as well as in the kids' shelves. And they're all, in the children's shelves, often they're fables. And in the adult shelves, we kind of move away and we try to call them something other than fables. But I'm interested in writing myths and fables and stories about extreme actions. I'm interested in revolution. I'm interested in major acts of bravery. So for me, writing for teenagers has been wonderful because it means that I can talk to teenagers about how to be brave. And writing for adults is as wonderful. Sometimes now my teenage readers are adults and they're voting. So that's been a very useful and kind of delightful thing about being someone who writes for teenagers. But when I begin, no, I don't necessarily know who the story is for. I just try to think of it as maybe this story is for as many people as I can pick it up. I want many kinds of readers.
Of course, you want the biggest readership you possibly can get, but you know that classification is important, isn't it, on the bookshelves?
On the bookshelves, yeah. People want it to be marketed.
They want to be told.
Way. Yeah, they want to know. But I would say that my teenage books, my young adult novels, have been read as many adults read them as teenagers, I think. And the only category I haven't really touched yet is like children's picture books. But even in that case, those are read by adults to children. So here we are. We're all reading the same. Really, we're reading the same stories. And I would say that my young adult novels are like the teenage versions of my adult novels.
I've got to ask, is that
you could read them all in a pile.
Kids picture books next on your agenda?
Maybe.
I
would love.
I read a lot of picture books.
I would love
books.
To do that. Yeah, exactly. Every parent reads a lot of picture
please,
books,
please,
right?
Make that a better experience for me.
I know.
Help me, please. So what are the books that you love yourself that you get excited about?
I am excited about learning new things. So I read a lot of nonfiction, but I also just read the new Emily Wilson translation of The Odyssey, which is thrilling. It's so good. And I read Madeline Miller's Circe, which has come out here recently, which is a piece of The Odyssey, but translated through the point of view of Circe, the witch goddess. Thrilling, really beautiful book.
Bit of an Odyssey thing happening here.
Yeah, I was in a pile. I did an event with Emily and she was
like
brilliant.
Odyssey
so
time.
I just read, I thought, oh, I'm back into that story, the story of a complicated man. I'm clearly interested in stories about complicated men and the women who have been the small parts of those larger narratives. I'm interested in fattening those up. So I'm reading a lot of books in which women and other authors have done that.
You're talking cats at the Writers' Festival. Are they your animal of choice?
I am. I'm doing a Beowulf event and I'm also doing a cat event. And I grew up with wild farm cats where I'm from. And so I am going to do a talk about how cats taught me to be a feminist.
How did cats do that?
Well, my cats were matriarchs. I had some very tough female cats who always had mini kittens. And they had their kittens following along behind them as they hunted, as they fought, as they did their work. So I watched them do that as a small child. And that was, for me, I just thought the world worked that way. I thought it was obvious that those female cats were powerful. They were strong. They were brave.
They
would
were
fight.
Frightening.
They were. They were. So, yeah, for me, I initially when I got invited to do the cat thing, I thought, is that really relevant to? And then I thought about it and I realized, oh, I think I was raised by cats. I think I was raised by farm cats. They were always in my life and always passing along beside me with their claws out. So, you know, there's a way of looking at my writing that says that all of my characters are like Black Panther, female Black Panther cats. And maybe that's true. Maybe it's an interesting, the society of cats is pretty, the women do the hunting. So,
wow. Cats, who would have thought it? Have you got cats in your life still?
I have some luscious male cats now who just nap.
You've gone for, why have you changed? Look, I'm just sorry.
They're
for
so
just
much
cuddling down here. What are they?
The male cats are really cuddly. The female cats are feisty and want to play, but my male cats are snuggly.
Did that reflect your life on the ranch as well, though? If you took that lesson from the cats, it wasn't directly contradicted by the human society you were seeing? Women weren't necessarily in charge
actually
there?
Actually, where I grew up, we were isolated from any larger civilization. I was a town of 500 people 10 miles away from us, and we didn't really have close neighbors. So my father taught me to do all of those things, those things that would be categorized as masculine. I spent my childhood climbing rocks and doing all kinds of wild building of things and plumbing. And
so they let you have fun.
I had fun, yeah. And I got to also just spend my childhood reading as many books as I could read, and he was a big reader. So I didn't really know that there was a sexist society out there waiting for me until I got to be a teenager.
And what happened when you realized?
I was angry, and it turned me into this. It turned me into a writer who thought, okay, I'll write new mythology, because I think stories shape our existence.
It is a rude shock, though, isn't it?
Oh, it was appalling and aggravating shock to realize that I was supposed to just be pretty to have power instead of smart or tough or strong or brave. None of those things mattered. It was just like, are you pretty enough? And then your prettiness fades or whatever, you get older, and then you lose all your power. This society just infuriates me. So no, thank you.
No, thank you, Maria. Me too. No, thank you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Maria Devana Headley has been my guest in the Drawing Room. Her latest book is The Mere Wife, and she's appearing this weekend at the Melbourne Writers' Festival.